been a flurry of movement in the last month or so, but last week we just got clarification. We got word that Santa's Boot Camp is going to be released by Sony Pictures this November.
Oh, cool.
Super.
Yeah. So it's a home release, so they'll release on DVD and video on demand and all the networks. But the independent Christmas film that I scored is going to have that Sony label on it.
Ah, sweet.
Yeah. And so that's the biggest news of my career.
Congratulations.
A lot's going to happen from that. Hopefully it'll keep going. But yeah, but there's a lot of other news. But do you guys have a structure as to like how we want to go about the interview? Like when we start and when we...
We're almost done, by the way.
Well, thanks a lot. That was great.
Welcome to Blind Abilities. I'm Pete Lane.
And I'm Jeff Thompson. And today we have Stephen Letness. He's a film composer and concert pianist. He puts music behind movies. All the drama and suspense, that's his job. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, guys. How are we doing?
Nice to meet you.
Great to meet you, Steve.
Nice to meet you both as well.
Welcome. Welcome to my boot camp.
Oh, my God. You're real?
You come here to make toys, then after Christmas, you go home to your little elf village or wherever you people live.
Who you calling people?
Home! I want to go home!
Claus, we got a runner.
Claus, we got a runner.
You better watch out.
We're gonna be in big trouble. We shouldn't be doing this.
One, two, three.
I need something stronger. Why don't you bring me some, chocolate milk?
Santa's Boot Camp. Coming soon.
My life keeps getting better and better.
So you've been busy lately.
I have been go, go, go. I've been, muscling through. I've gotten a ton of work. Thankfully, I'm getting work. So, in the past 4 months, I think I've worked with 7 different producers and directors on 23 different projects. I think I've scored... I don't know, over maybe 150 minutes of individual music, which may or may not sound a lot, like a lot to some people. Just spend a lot of networking and doing the music, in the film industry. Music is a very small part of what you actually do. There's a lot more to it. Kind of like, we'll have this interview and then Jeff, you'll go in and you'll cut it. That's where a lot of the time is taken.
Oh, yeah.
And it's sidling up and shoring up where your cuts go. Where's the quiet stuff? Can we take out some of Steve's ugly reverb in the room? Do we want to RX that thing? Where do we put it? And that's where all the work is. And then, you fit it maybe into a time frame and whatnot. But there's a lot of work. And then, building relationships, meetings, talking back and forth, taking notes. And the irony of what I love is what I do is maybe about 10% of my actual job.
For every hour we get of podcasts, we probably spent 4 or 5 hours trying to get there. I'm just guessing those numbers, but it seems like that sometimes.
Yeah, I would say easily.
Yeah, it's all about a process. And I think that's why, people, I think this is one of the problems that people have, especially in Nepal. I'll be biased too. Maybe we all could be biased, but I think that's another problem that a lot of people have with their sight challenge or being blind or whatever we want to call it is we get frustrated because things do take longer. And the reality is stuff just takes longer anyway.
Yeah.
But we internalize it because we think, oh crap, well, we can't see very well. And I bet a sighted person could do this a lot quicker. So why should I keep doing this? Because it's just a waste of my time. I'm not realizing that most stuff takes longer and costs more money than you think it does, folks.
True.
And that's something that we have in common with the rest of the world. And therefore, we have the opportunity to... actually, I was given a... I gave a talk the other day because I do presentations on being sight challenged and working in the film industry to different clubs, high schools, and around town or whatnot. I was given a speech to a bunch of kids who were doing the Blind Inc. program, and they were coming from around the region to learn basic living skills. And they were here for, I think it was a full week. And I had all these ideas that I wanted to talk to them about. It was hot outside. They were playing beach ball, and it was the hottest day in June. So everybody's sweating like pigs. and we're drinking water, and I'm sitting, I'm talking with the kids, and I get up and I speak with them, and it occurs to me, holy cats and creepers, man, we're like, what are blind people really good at than most people? We're natural problem solvers. Like, we get up, we have to figure out how to do things. You know, a lot of people, a lot of those muggles out there, the normals out there, they don't necessarily have to solve these problems, but day in, day out, persons with sight challenges, we are nothing but problem solvers.
That's right.
Good point.
We are forced to be resourceful. And I love that, because especially in my work, directors love that. Because when I stumbled into this career, what do directors want but to create unique movies with a different vision, quote unquote, pun included.
Mm-hmm.
And I come at it from the exact opposite of what they're thinking. You know, I kind of reverse engineer their movies and, you know, give thoughts on the music to support their story. But doing music for film is solving problems of how to support, to tell the story and how not to overshadow. But it's, directors want a different way of looking at what they're doing sometimes for different people along the process. Your editors do. So people down along the line, different ways of looking at things. As being sight challenged, I am afforded the opportunity to have to look at whatever a director gives me differently than what other composers may look at it as, and thus it may have a different flavor than what they would get with somebody else. But back to your other point, you know, yes, everything just takes longer. Some people get surprised by that, but, you know, hopefully, you know, we will muscle through. We will, you know, learn the value of grit. Get to and figure stuff out and live powerful, resourceful lives. You know?
So, Stephen, what tools are you using on a daily basis?
The biggest are my iPad and Zoom Text. Those are the main tools. I still have it, and I still use it from time to time. But back in the 90s, my ophthalmologist gave me this handheld magnifier, and I think it was like a 9X. And so the magnifier was... The field of vision inside of it was very small. Up until I got the iPad a few years ago, I would carry that bulbous thing around with me everywhere I went to read my mail, to read my phone, to read text messages. And it was annoying because I would have to squint so much. I hated squinting so much.
Oh, I hate squinting.
You know, it just drives me crazy. I got early onset crow's feet in my 20s. I was so annoyed. my girlfriends would kind of laugh. I'm like, man, you got crow's feet already, honey.
I was always squinting with one eye.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, there's a bunch of pirates walking around, you know. Oh, you know, peg leg in a salty attitude. But then the iPad came along. It turned my entire life around, you know. And I would take photos of my mail and then just zoom in and then read it, you know, with the, you know, double taps and all that, and, you know, copy and speak stuff. So, you know, I have my mail read to me. So the iPad has literally changed my life. And then Zoom Text has changed how I approach music composition, because I use a DAW called Cubase. And I just listened to your podcast this morning about Amadeus Pro and you know, mixers and microphones and whatnot, because what I want to do is get back into my blind ambition project, when I have time and time to go look for funding, you know, I want to document the process. And I was very pleased to see and hear that you guys are doing this process on podcasting and how to do it. And you have, here are the numbers, folks. This is the mic. This is the mixer. This is what these numbers mean. And not everybody does that, because there's this bland, dismissive feeling that I get it when I go watch YouTube videos that, well, you're an idiot if you don't know this stuff already, folks. And you got millennials talking to you like, what, you don't know this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you not know what a preamp is? How do you not know what fan of power is, you dummy?
Right.
And I'm like, well, some of us don't boyo. And so I really appreciate that you guys on those podcasts say, look, 804, you got 8 channels, left and right. There's stereo. That's what that means. And you got 4 different ways you can send it. Like, and you walk us through. There's hand holding that I think people on YouTube don't like doing, but there's also hand guiding, you know, leading from behind that blind abilities that you guys do. And there's a difference in your approach. So you don't have to be dismissive and afraid of being too basic, but also you can share in a very informative way that encourages people to say, it's okay, I learned this. Oh, this feels really good. I loved what I just learned. I like this source of information I'm getting from XYZ podcast. I'm going to listen to it some more instead of, you know, being shut down. Because,
hey, Pete, I like this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, Steve, we're interviewing you. Enough of this. But thank you so much.
You bet.
That's great.
So I think I'll be getting me some Behringers.
Hey. So, relatively inexpensive and really simple to use.
No, that's good, and then maybe I'll be able to use some on a few other podcasts that'll be on. You know, I'll finally have a microphone for my iPad.
There you go. There's a really nice one, the Shure MV88. It's accessible, and you could change it to stereo, so you could actually have a central microphone where you're talking into, and they have 2 capsules that face left and right that would pick up your piano if you're playing and talking about it. It's just some neat stuff out there. Especially right from your iPad. You don't have to go buy a whole new console, you know, just boom.
Sure. Well, it's very, very important, especially for a lot of folks, you know, people that who may be on disability or may not have a lot of money. There again is the capacity to be resourceful and find ways to cheaply but efficiently be able to do what you want to do. Maybe state services helps you out, you know, this and that. But yeah, you got to be resourceful nowadays. I mean.
Well, and your point is that you've got to be that way, not just to survive or get by, but you also have to be that way if you want to excel, if you want to achieve greatness like you have done. Let me segue, if you don't mind, from your iPad tool in your day-to-day activities to your actual process of writing and composing music. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Generally, a director will send me a rough cut of a film. We'll go through it and we'll do what's called a spotting session. And generally, it's over the phone because, quite honestly, I've never worked with anybody from Minnesota. All of my work is elsewhere. So most of the people that I've worked with, I haven't even met. So I've worked with people from LA, Atlanta, Ohio, Luxembourg, Italy, a lot of places, and I've never met these folks. And so generally we'll do spotting sessions where they'll say, this is where I want music here, and then I want it to end there. I want music to start here, end there. And generally they'll give me just a couple adjectives. You know, like, so it's a world, like last year I did a World War II documentary about the Battle of the Bulge over in Luxembourg. And the whole thing was in Luxembourgish, wasn't in English. And so I needed him, the director, to guide me where he might want music and where he might not, and tell me and give me the gist of what each scene is. Because it was a very unusual way. But here's the funny thing. But the language of film is you can generally tell, especially by the tone of someone's voice, when a mood changes. Mm-hmm. It's like in a TV show. Say you're watching a TV show. They generally don't necessarily always start a scene with music. If they do, it's generally bleed over from the previous scene to assist with transitions, right? So generally, in most cases, you will start a scene without any music. And generally, music will creep in. You won't even notice it creeping in until something shifts. There is an emotional shift in the scene. So when you walk into an office and you're talking about your weekend to your buddy, and then she looks at you and says, well, actually, my boyfriend broke up with me. He was sleeping with so-and-so. You will then hear the music come in, or may not even notice it. But that's when you bring music in. And so when I'm doing this World War II film, I'm actually listening to the inflection and tone of this Luxembourgish speaking man or woman, and that's then where I'll put the music in, and more often than not, I would be right. And the guy will come back and say, you hit that hit point, you know, better than I thought you would, you know, crazy American. And it's, and that was one of the benefits of being sight challenged, is because guess what? We got ears, folks. And it's not that we hear better than everybody. It's that we can pay attention to more things. And thus we are more readily capable of noticing the subtleties of life. And so you can hear when a mood shifts in a human voice, even if they don't think they're shifting in their mind, the voice will still shift. Some people don't realize what's happening. Anyway, so the point is, they'll give me a few adjectives of, hey, this scene is an action-oriented scene. I want it to be heroic, but a little sad. And those are my two adjectives, heroic and sad. That's all I need. That's all I want. You know, there's a constant back and forth that composers have about, well, do you really want a director who knows absolutely nothing about music, or a director who knows or thinks they know everything about music? Because then the director tries to talk to you in your language, and you don't want them to, because they'll be misusing words. You don't want a naive director, but you want a director that says, look, here's the mood I want, because they hired me, the composer, because they think I know what I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. So all I want from them is their vision, their idea, their feel for a scene. And then it's up to me to go back to them with different sketches, different ideas to say, here's what I'm thinking. This is what I think this scene needs to support the story. And either I'm right or I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, then I go back and then I write something else. But they hire you for a reason, and there's power in that.
If you take the Dr. Seuss, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, remember when that little dog thought he was going for the sleigh ride and all of a sudden he realized he was then had to mush in front of it? There's a big switch in emotion to, you know. I'm sorry. I just thought that was.
No, that's awesome. No, that's true. And actually, that's,
we go
that's...
from the girl's boyfriend cheating on her to the little puppy.
I had these great flashbacks to that scene. Oh gosh, it's been a long time. But it's funny that you say that, because one of the first things that got me on this feature gig with Sony, they were testing me out, and they're like, "Hey, we need you to write this kind of music for this scene." And I remember the director saying, "I hadn't even gotten the gig yet, but here's the other rule: when people ask you to do something and you're not sure you can do it, you still say yes."
Mm-hmm.
And then you figure it out. Because jobs don't come because you're just prepared for it. And then this person you've never met obviously knows you're prepared for it. Heck no, that's not how the world works. Generally, it's a whole bunch of hurry up, figure it out before they realize you're fake. At least that's how the industry is. But you got to be forced. You know, you have to force yourself to be challenged. Otherwise, you know, you're not going to make anything or build anything. I can't tell you how many ideas I have. I have so many. I am very opinionated when it comes to work and disability and creativity and being self-employed and self-empowerment, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, to your point, the Grinch. One of the things that the director asked me to do is that, hey, well, we're going to have a Christmas scene where there's a sleigh and the kids are in this sleigh and they're going to try to escape. Yeah, have you ever seen Dr. Seuss, How the Grinch Stole Christmas? I'm like, yeah. He said, well, I need something like that for this scene. Go. And so I spent the day, you know, thinking about How the Grinch Stole Christmas and that kind of music, and then sending him this piece of music back to him to see if he was okay with it. And I probably did this 6 different times. You know, directors can get kind of abusive sometimes with what they ask of you. But I'm like, there's no way in heck I am losing out on this opportunity. Finally, at the end, I'm doing six different scenes, some of them like Danny Elfman, you know, like Edward Scissorhands or whatnot. He said, you know what, you've been working real hard for us. I really love what you've been doing. Why don't you just score the whole movie?
All right.
Yeah. You know? And then I got the gig. The irony is none of the music that I sent him, none of those six pieces of music that I sent him made it into the movie.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason is because what I was writing were just examples of what I could do, which did not fit the story. He thought they might, but you can't write for a story very well if you haven't seen it or heard it.
Right. So this is like a portfolio in a sense.
Yeah.
It was you showed him what you're capable of, not specifically what you would do for that piece. Yeah.
Yeah.
So your job interview wasn't exactly what you're going to do.
Pretty much. I ended up doing a whole bunch of different stuff because also on that process, you also learn how little of an ego you have, especially in what we call post-production, which is where editing happens, which is where mixing happens, which is where music happens, and where you have to let ego go because you are there to support a story. Mm-hmm. And I'm completely fine with that. I'm self-aware. I'm self-assured. And I don't care about notoriety. I mean, I'm in background. I don't care. I want to help tell a story. And so it's how to not overwrite a scene. And like my editor, the video editor on it, like you guys, we had a relationship for 2 years over email. And we just became the best of friends over email. He would write me and say, look, hey, I love what you're doing here, but it's so busy. You got too many strings here. You got too much this and that. It's so busy. Can you simplify it? Can you settle down? And so I would.
In Amadeus, remember when the king said, there's too many notes.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. You know, because you're writing music. You're not necessarily writing an opus. You're not writing... Oh, you're writing a score. You're writing literally underscore, subtle, softer, supportive music. You're not necessarily always writing themes. And that's what I had to learn on this Santa's Boot Camp movie is how to settle down and not write so much. And it was great. I learned a lot on this film. I went out last January to LA because we flew out to go onto what's called a dub stage or a mixing stage, where they take the dialogue and the effects and the music and they mix it all together and then they bring it up to an audio level good enough for theaters. And so we were there for 4 days, and that's when I finally met this video editor who's from Australia. And like now he works out in LA and he works on like Nicolas Cage movies and for ABC and Fox and whatnot. And he's gonna direct a film next year that I'm gonna score, depending upon like how well the Sony film does. So he's working out in LA, and so hopefully, you know, we'll be scoring this other film too together. But it's like, you guys, I didn't know the guy for years. All it was through emails, barely any phone conversations. But that's how this business can be, and that's the benefit of technology, that we can all do all this over Skype. You know, we could make an entire movie without ever seeing each other, talking to each other. It can all happen. And that's what's really great about tech, and a great time for persons with challenges like ourselves to be able to really reach out and reach further than what we would have even a few years ago. And thus, I am able to write the kind of music that I'm doing, score the kind of movies that I'm doing, because I have the tech to do it.
Write by ear or by, you know, are you there with a pencil dotting in the quarter notes and the...
No, it's all by ear. You know, I can never see well enough to read sheet music.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all in my head. And then so you play it out and you use a MIDI keyboard and you play out the themes and Then you play out the supporting themes and counter melodies, and you play out the percussion, and you do all that. And if you're going to have an orchestra play it, what I would then do is hire an orchestrator who then knows a lot more than I would know about writing notes on paper for an orchestra. And so I'd say, all right, here's a recording. Here are the stems, like here are the parts. Like here's the string stem and the brass stem and the woodwind stem. And I'd separate it all out for them, him or her. And I would give them the audio stuff, but I would also give them the MIDI information. And the actual notes on the piano roll, because there are most DAWs, most workstations have the ability to turn MIDI data into actual notes. And so that's what they would do. They would turn it into notes, but then make sure everything sits right. And they would put in all the mezzo forte, mezzo piano, crescendos, diminuendos, codas, all that. And so I would hire them so they can make my MIDI music onto sheet music, which then you would give to a conductor and then give to the orchestra to play.
That's really neat. This morning I was part of a conversation. They were talking about the motif, sound card, how it goes out of the MIDI cable, goes into the motif. I was just listening and going, huh. So you deal with all that stuff.
Yeah, it was a lot to learn too, because I got into, like I said, I just got into this a few years ago, and I was learning from the ground up because I had no friends in the industry. I had no friends in working with audio in a way that could help me, because I was bouncing around the country kind of in my own world. I had actually stopped doing music for years because I was so frustrated with my vision, and I had a real downward spiral for a while, and I stopped writing music for like 5 years. And now I got a community now. I mean, there are tons of them. I mean, you can belong to too many groups now. But back then, this was like 2011. I mean, but back then I didn't know where to go. I just didn't know what to do, where to go. So I was fumbling through things like using Zoom text on my computer and then using an interface, like the mixers you were talking about for a podcast. You know, some of those mixers have GUIs. They have, you know, the application that can pop up on your screen so you can adjust certain things, mm-hmm. right? Well, my Zoom text software did not interface well with the actual hardware and application software. So when Zoom text was turned on, I could not see the application on screen. I had to undo Zoom text, and then the actual application would pop up on my screen. So the irony was, I had the information in front of me to change stuff on my piece, but I couldn't read it because I couldn't use Zoom text to read it. Mm. And there's a stupid irony in tech sometimes. There's technology right now that I can't upgrade to because some of the applications are not conducive with assistive technology for me.
Would that be Sonar?
No, this is Cubase.
Cubase, yes.
And Cubase is phenomenal. It is a beautiful piece of software. Lots of people use it in my world. But because Download Windows Manager, DWM, is a part of their new software, I'm still on Windows 7, they won't. I can't upgrade to it because then I can't use my Zoom text because then things crash. But there's also something to be said that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I'm just fine on 7, and I know we're getting too technical, but I want to say, like, here I'm working with all these people and going to LA and going to award shows and doing red carpet stuff and working with great people and great actors you've heard of. Yay, blah blah blah, you know, pomp and circumstance, blah blah blah. But at the end of the day, I still have these stupid issues to come home to and figure out. And like I said, we're problem solvers. And so it all comes down to how we're going to solve the basic of problems from the beginning so we can get to what we want to do, which is writing music, which is, you know, writing books, which is being creative, being artistic. And here's the other thing I want to talk about. I'm kind of on my soapbox, but because I was nominated for an award out in LA last month. And I was going to get up there and I was going to talk about for the score that I did for this Christmas movie. And I was going to get up there and I was going to talk about the arts and persons with disabilities, because the irony that's out there is like the film industry, which is one of the hardest industries to actually make a living in, let alone break into. It's ridiculous. It's self-serving. It's mean. It's vindictive. It's punitive. But it's also a glorious place to work of community and togetherness and coming together for a greater good. It's not necessarily as selfish as people always think. There's a lot of uplifting of spirits. Anyway, there's good and bad, just like in any industry. But the film industry is ridiculously hard. And here I am muscling my way through to try to make a living, to make movies. And I'm thinking to myself, what other industry could care less about a disability? And what I mean by that is all of the directors and all of the producers that I have worked with, they don't care that I'm blind, because at the end of the day, what matters is the product. And so long as you can make great products, so long as you have something to say, so long as you have a way to write music or to write a book or to have a voice, nobody cares that you can't see this and that. And that is such a good feeling to know that you can make it in the arts on your merit, and that there's no asterisk next to your name. And that's what I loved about this nomination. That's what I love about always getting this work. It's not that, oh, Steve, he's a great composer for a blind guy. No, it's Steve. He's a great composer. He should work on your film. Oh, he's blind? Oh, okay, whatever. We can talk about that later. Whatever, I don't care. I just need them to write the music for my film. And art the world is flat. You know, Thomas Friedman, the world is flat for persons with sight challenges or any kind of disability when it comes to the arts. Because what matters is the product. At the end of the day, how beautiful is that picture? How beautiful is that recording? How well did you produce that podcast?
And then the press comes along and says, blind guy accepts award.
Yeah, they do. You know, life isn't fair. You just, like, how many battles do you really want to fight?
Right, exactly. You
know? And so long as I know that I'm doing well and that I'm doing what I can to improve my station, to improve my happiness, my own self-value and worth, whatever, folks, you know, you can call me whatever you want, you know, or ignore the fact that I'm blind. I don't care, because once you can focus on the self to figure out what you want to do, to find purpose in life, to find meaning, to find where you're going to spend your time to fulfill something within you, the tiny little details of what other people might say or think or have about you, they just kind of roll off your back. Why? Because you got other stuff to do. It's being mindful of the self and what you need to improve your station, to push yourself forward. That builds confidence. And that's why, like, I want to do this Blind Ambition project. I know it's tongue-in-cheek. It's a working title. I'm going to change the stupid title. But like the whole point is to bring kids and adults with sight challenges who are musicians, but who may not have the tools, who may not have the multi-$1,000 speakers and software and producers that I may know, to get their music out, to have it recorded well. And so I want to make this documentary about bringing kids and adults in who are musicians, whether they sing, whether they play the piano, whether they play the guitar, and they just haven't had the experience or the money, because a lot of us aren't working, right? It's unfortunate that a lot of us are unemployed, and so we don't have the funds to explore our hobbies. And then we got to jump through all the hoops for SSB, or do we really want to beg our parents for money? Do we really want to ask our friends to support the GoFundMe account? It can be very self-effacing. It can be very frustrating. And so I want to do this to bring folks into the studio, surround them with professional musicians, with professional producers, into top quality studios, so we can take the music that they have written and turn it into something that's worthy of, you know, 10 million YouTube hits, that's worthy to be listened to in true 24-bit awesomeness.
Oh, that's great.
and then explore, explore the process of beginning to end, because what it is, it's about empowerment. Because to find what you want to do with your life, you have to make decisions, and you have to stumble, you have to fall, you have to fall forward, you have to fall correctly, and be a part of the decision-making process in the studio. Because how many of us can hold up our hands when they ask, well, you know, how often do people actually ask your opinion? How often do people actually make decisions for you? And how annoying is that? And then can we admit, do we kind of get lazy and say, well, I don't have to make that decision because, you know what, somebody else will, and that's fine. I'm used to that now. That can feed on itself. It becomes this downward spiral of the soul. And thus, when you're not making as many decisions for yourself, well, then what kind of confidence do you have to go out and do something to build yourself up again? You have less. And so what I want to do is give people the opportunity to come to the studio and be a part of it. Okay, well, the mic goes here. Can you hear yourself? Great. Do you like how this sounds? No, sir, producer person. I want to record that again. And give people the confidence that they're the decision makers in the studio, because when you make decisions, you build confidence. And at the end of the day, do we have a great track? Does it sound amazing? You know, how do you feel about this? All right, now you've had this great experience in the studio. What do you want to do with it? Do you want to go to IPR? Do you want to go to some institute to work about music? Or have you said, you know what? This is great. I had a great experience in the studio, but I realized, you know what? I've seen this through. I have come to the end of this process. I got this one song that I needed to get out. I'm done. I'm going to go do something else now. I'm going to go to this school and learn to be an actuary. I'm going to go to this school to be a psychiatrist. Or whatever. It's a way to get people through a process, through a gauntlet, to see what they want to do. But it becomes an empowering thing, and then we film it, and we follow them through it. That's my blind ambition project. And you guys can email me too. But just email me at like my regular steveletness@gmail.com. STEVELETNES. Letness, LETNES. It spells Nestle. NESTLE. You know, LETNES, steveletness@gmail.com. If you know somebody who is a crazy good musician, but they just haven't had the opportunity to go into the studio to record it, because I don't know, this project may take a year, this may take a couple years, but I want to find folks out there who have something to say, but they just haven't had a chance to do it.
Sony could keep you busy.
Sony could keep you busy. Yeah, I mean, this film comes out November 15th. And then actually I'm working with a place in town here to do a residency to teach music appreciation and music development, for the first 3 months to folks. So I'll be doing that for 3 months, and then I'll be working on this other buddy comedy, and I'll be scoring that. And then there's a couple other films that I'm doing. So 2017 is already kind of being built up, but you're supposed to be busy. You know, if you're not busy, you're not working hard enough.
There you go.
It's really great that you're living your passion, you know, the stuff that you want to do. I mean, 4 years into it and you're just thriving.
It's great to be so busy that you can't do anything else.
Yes, it is. But how you do that is you have to get out. You have to meet people. You have to network. You have to connect.
Assert yourself. Exactly.
And it's one of those kind of dirty little secrets about the industry, but probably about any industry, is that your talent, how killer you are singing or how good you are on the keys, is probably fourth on the list of things that people are looking for. The first thing being, are you cool to hang out with? Are you nice? Like, can people see themselves being stuck in a room with you for hours at a time and being okay with that?
Excellent point.
You know, can you carry on a decent conversation with somebody and then talk about them? Because the other thing is everybody loves talking about themselves. I mean, that's absolutely why I'm doing this interview too. Like, I love it that you guys are asking questions about me. Yay, I'm special for the day. You know, ask them questions. People love to talk about themselves, but the talent is less on the list because they say it's about who you know. But what I learned in the different films that I've done and the different people I've met out there, it's not necessarily who you know, it's who you trust. And the only way they trust you is if they spend time with you, if they talk with you, if you reach out to help them, if you can be kind, and like they tell you something and you don't go blab to your friends. Trustworthiness is what will get you further than anything else. And then along the way, they'll actually listen to your SoundCloud page or go to your Instagram to check out your art. That's less on the list. So, but you, the only way to do that is to get out, to reach out, to network, connect, go to events, go to forums, be a part of forums, and just be a good person, be a friendly person that people would want to spend time with.
You know, I'm going to take notes on this podcast. This is good.
Yeah.
I got a lot to say.
You do have a lot of good stuff to say. Hey, let's Steve, let's get some specifics out on tape, as we say. What's the award that you were referring to earlier?
It was this film festival out in Los Angeles called the Love International Film Festival. I was nominated for Best Score.
Wow.
Santa's Boot Camp was actually nominated for 7 awards. There were a lot of people there, and we had some very recognizable people come through there. So we all got to do the red carpet thing and all that.
Pretty good field to have your name dropped in, though.
Yeah, it is. And they've written some articles from it, and there have been interviews with people that they bring up your name or they bring up the film. And because what it is, too, it's making money, because we want to make a living. And I have so much to say about this. Making money, it's not necessarily directly related to exactly what you do. It's about awareness. And you can, if people are aware of you, if people know about you and are talking about you, there's more opportunities to get work or to be brought in for something or so on and so forth. It's awareness to people know who you are, because it's ironic that you will make less money that is directly related to exactly what you think you want to be doing as you will with the things surrounding it. Here's a perfect example. A manager out in LA, I met her at a book signing for this guy who my friends know, who's been on like the Stargate series. There's a character named Ball. He was an evil guy. He had kind of a Australian accent, and he was a baddie. And my friends worked with him, and so we were going to his book signing, and I got to know his manager. And so she and I have been chatting, and she reps some authors out here in Minnesota. So I'm like, well, hey, if you're coming out to Minnesota anyway, why don't you come to my college and do a talk? And so by getting to know her and offering to help her, it's not just about what you can get out of it. Find ways to help other people, because holy cats and dogs, what are all the normals going to do when somebody who's blind and obviously can't do anything for themselves actually offers to help? Whoa, mind blown, right? I'm being facetious.
The normals. I love that. The muggles.
it's what it is. Like, but we have to find a way to help others, find a way to assist, find something that others need and want that you can help with and offer to do something about it. Most of the time, people aren't going to take you up on it, but that goes for blind folks, disabled folks, normals, the muggles, whoever. Most people don't take people up on their offer to help. It's just the human condition. So it's nothing isolated to, it's nothing to be self-persecutorial about, if that's even a word. It's just most people don't accept the help. But the cool thing is offer to help, because you know what? When they think of you again, oh, that person offered to help me. I like them.
Mm-hmm.
And that leaves a good taste in their mouth about you. And you didn't even do anything. But you got to be genuine. I mean, you got to be genuine when you offer to help. It's something that you can help with. But you got to assist people. How can you help them? Because then they'll remember that and they'll like you and they might use you again. But anyway, so I offered to this gal to talk at because I went to Concordia College up in Moorhead. And I got my degree in social studies education. And now I'm working in movies. Anyway.
I was going to ask, how's that going for you?
That's right. It's the liberal arts part that I got out of that school and friends. But by talking to my school and getting her to speak there, they said, well, why don't you come up and speak too? And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And see, there's an opportunity that popped up because I was helping someone else with an opportunity. And that comes to awareness and sharing who you are, even though it was on the behalf of somebody else, by lifting someone else up, you are lifted up as well. And so I'm taking a Greyhound up to Concordia to give a speech about music and film and my career.
How are you going to find something to say? That's what I want to know.
I know, they don't have enough time.
you might have to work on your enthusiasm. Just a pointer.
It's so funny to be understated. Generally, I'm so understated because I work in post-production. I work in the background. Like, I work in a studio alone, you know, so I don't talk very much. So when people give me a chance to talk, I am on springs. You know, I am through the roof to talk about this stuff. And here's another thing that I do want to share. And this is just an idea, because here's the thing. It's okay to have ideas that don't go anywhere, but you got to keep having ideas and you got to work through them to figure out which ones will work, right? We have to have ideas, but don't get discouraged because some of them don't work. You know, most of the film industry is all talk, right? Well, there's a reason for that, because there are lots of ideas and not every idea is a good one, but you have to talk through ideas to get them to a stage, to make a pilot, to do this and that, right? So yeah, it is all talk. It should be, because we're brainstorming. Anyway, so I had this idea the other day about musicians out there, and I was thinking about this for Amadeus Pro. Like, I probably should keep this to myself, but like, there's a way that I think persons who are even relatively basic with their music knowledge could make some money. And don't worry, this isn't a scheme. But there's something in the film and TV industry called production library music, and it's production library music that music supervisors and producers of shows go onto the internet to find different kinds of music to place into television shows. Like, they don't want to hire a composer. They just want the music because they need it now. And so people write music and they put it on the internet that music supervisors then buy to put into a show. Now, it's a crazy saturated market and it's all about quantity. But I was thinking the other day, because I have a business partner who does music library music, or production library music, but I thought, well, gosh, if I'm doing this as a sight-challenged person, you know, why can't other sight-challenged people who are at home, you know, looking for maybe some residual income over time, this isn't an immediate thing, but over time, to write music to give to these libraries that people can buy? You know, and it's because I was thinking, because when you brought up Amadeus Pro, I thought, well, wait, they don't have to just use that for podcasting. Can't they do that? Can't they hook up like a MIDI keyboard?
Sure.
Can't they hook up and write some piano stuff, you know, throw some drums over it?
Absolutely.
And do some strings on it. And then, but then you make this little 2-minute piece of music, and then you got to do it hundreds and hundreds of times to make, because it's about quantity, not quality. Mm-hmm. But then you provide it to these production libraries, and then over time you it's kind of a process. But my thinking was, gosh, why can't other persons with disabilities, not just sight challenges, but persons with disabilities, write music for these libraries?
Exactly.
And maybe great make idea. Some residual income along the way, because also what's also neat, and this is me waxing off, you can probably cut this out, but it's also a tax benefit. If you incorporate as a person as a minority member, or like, what is it, the women's and minorities tax rebate? If you incorporate yourself, you become a tax incentive for other companies to use you, because your music may not be different than what persons with regular sight can do, but the fact that they don't have to spend the money, or they can write you off, holy cow, that's your hook. That's your in for them to save money.
Writing off the blind.
Right.
That makes perfectly good sense.
Well, yeah, it's being self-employed. You got to be creative. You know, try to find different ideas to make it in this world. But it's just an area, because I met this kid when I was giving this talk who he makes drum loops. When I was giving this, he was one of the kids who came to the Twin Cities to learn some life skills for Blind Ink. And we were chatting, and he's this really cool musician. And he goes online and he sells drum loops. So I talked to him tomorrow. I said, okay, you sell these drum loops, but how are you doing with that? And he's like, well, you know, kind of so-and-so. And it's like, well, and then I talked to him about production library music. said, look, that's not a pyramid scheme. I'm not making money off of you. I'm just saying there are thousands of people doing this, but if you want to sell your music, there's a proper way to go about it to eventually over time maybe have some additional funds. But it's nothing to get crazy excited about because it does take years. But it's just an option that I thought of because I'd only got into Production Library Music a few months ago because I was busy working on films, right? So I didn't have time to look into it. But you know, as you guys do, as you think about this, and as I do, as someone with a sight challenge, how can I help others? How can I help people with a sight challenge? I'm biased towards person with sight challenges. How can I help folks? And that occurred to me that if there's some folks with sight challenges who have some music ability, this simply might be another option to explore. Because we need options. Sometimes as a sight challenge person, we get frustrated because we see a whole bunch of stuff out there that we can't do. Well, it's nice to have options. Options are luxury. Sure. You know, it's a luxury to have options, and it's nice to know that there are other ways out there. And me coming from the industry of film and entertainment, there's just another option. Maybe because I don't want to do data entry, you know,
right.
But, you know, maybe I want to do music. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to let people know that here's this called Production Library Music that's out there.
Great point.
You know,
Jeff and I are always looking for podcast music, similar need, but we usually look for royalty-free things that we can purchase at a relatively low cost, but we never looked at it from the other side of the coin, producing it and actually not only sharing it and helping other people, but possibly generating some income from it as well. So if someone has this talent and the interest, what would they look for? Production Library on Google?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are hundreds of libraries out there, and some of them are hard to get into. Some of them are royalty-free, and there's a long debate about that, but there's also...
Right. Yeah. It's not really royalty-free.
No.
and about usage of royalty-free and what that means for artists, but what it comes down to is... There's so much out there, and it's about knocking on doors. It's about sending emails. There's a site to check out basic stuff just to get your feet wet called musiclibraryreport.com. There is a subscription part of it, but there are a lot of stuff on there that's free that you can just go and dip your toes in and say, do I like this world? Do I like the conversations they're having? How can I learn more? There's a lot of info out there. But if you have questions, you could also just email me.
You bring up such a great point about who you are, because you're doing a craft. You're doing something. You're successful. You're having fun at it. And you're always thinking about the other people, you know, like how, you know, you're exposing what you're doing, how to do it, tips for them to do it. It's really cool to see that in you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. It's one thing that I think a lot of it comes from. It's funny. A lot of film composers do a lot of tutorials, a lot of help videos on YouTube and on their sites, and they write articles to help other film composers. And I think that's an element of because we are in the background, because we help tell stories. It's not a film about our music. We are hired to write music to support another story. We are, you know, what is it from the Tao Te Ching, that, you know, I don't lead from the front, I lead from behind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what composers do because they don't need to be up front, but we are used to assisting directors tell stories. So it's a natural transition to helping others with X, Y, or Z.
You guys are that beautiful hum in the background.
That's right. Hopefully the hum isn't coming from the electricity wires giving us radiation poisoning, right?
Well, music is such a powerful component in a film. I'll watch a movie, and it's when it's like you said earlier, Steve, when that emotion or that shift comes, and then the music kicks in, and all of a sudden you've got a lump in your throat, or you've got a anxiety you know, to go along with the plot line. It's a very powerful component in that final product.
If you're out in the woods and you start hearing that music coming in or that you know, from Jason or something like that, get out of the woods. I mean,
that's right.
I don't want to hear some of Steve's music when I'm in the woods. Like, he'll probably really play with my head.
That's right. Or maybe you hear some happy little gnomes from the corner. You say,
there you
that's
go.
A Smurf house I'd love to go to. And then inside is a very scary bear that eats you alive and throws you around like Leo DiCaprio.
So, Steve, we talked about Dream Theater being your favorite band, per se. What other casual music do you like to listen to?
Man, I tell you the truth, I work out a lot. I go to the gym a lot. I run a lot. But there are caveats to all of that because I'm sight challenged. I can only run at certain times, and I can only run in certain areas, and I can only work out in certain places. But I exercise a lot because it's something that I can control. And I think being sight challenged, and or maybe this is just something wrong with me, but I can be a control freak sometimes because it's out of safety. Like, I need to be safe in order to succeed. You need to take risks, but you need to take risks from a point that is secure. And your position of security can be expanded and developed further to take risks more easily based on the amount of successes you have had to make your position of safety bigger and more widespread. So what I mean by that is, so I work out a lot because it gives me confidence. I like to look good to myself. And so I listen to a lot of thumping heavy metal music. I love metal. I have always loved metal. The first album, my first song that I remember is Twisted Sister, We're Not Gonna Take It. that is what threw me over the wall into the mosh pit of music and metal. So honestly, I listen to a lot of metal. Yeah, I do listen to orchestral stuff. James Horner is my hero. He's a film composer. So he did like Titanic and Braveheart and, you know, Apollo 13, Glory. Oh, yeah. James Horner is my absolute musical hero. For a lot of people, it's John Williams. And John Williams is the creme de la creme for at least the age of cinema that we're in from the 70s through the 2000s. And now he's working on all the Star Wars again. So he's the best, in my opinion. But the one that speaks to me is James Horner. So I do listen to quite a few film scores, some classical stuff. But honestly, it's mostly heavy metal. a lot of emo, a lot of drum and bass, a lot of EDM, which is more sound design that you can dance to. Just a lot of thump stuff because I need stuff with passion. I need stuff with aggression and passion.
Well, Dream Theater will definitely deliver that.
It will. And that's
Avenged
what I...
Sevenfold. Thank You, Scientist. Have you heard Thank You, Scientist?
I have now. What I loved about Dream Theater is the one, because I used to have a prog band back in junior high and high school called Cumulus. And I learned, and so we would do a lot of Dream Theater covers as well as our own stuff. But Kevin Moore, who is their original keyboardist, he had like three keyboards set up.
Oh, yeah.
And from him, when I was like, I don't know, 12 or whatever, he showed me that I could layer sounds because I saw that he had three keyboards and that he was playing with multiple hands. And he's the one who showed me that I could do more than just piano music. And so Kevin Moore and Dream Theater, now there's Jordan Rudess, he's the keyboardist for Dream Theater now. But Kevin Moore was the guy who was the precursor to me learning orchestral music, because I learned from him that you could make multi-timbral sounds and play multiple things at once. And so I'm forever grateful to him, and I'm still grateful to Dream Theater for what they've done to show me that it is possible to do that stuff.
What would you say to an up-and-coming kid that's in high school, going to college? What words of advice would you have for them?
Don't go to college.
Great.
I'm half kidding. And I'm kind of being facetious about that. But I got kicked out of music composition. You know, so a lot of my learning was lessons. Like I had a lot of private lessons for piano, but I learned all my orchestration stuff from YouTube. The reason why I got kicked out of class was because they couldn't teach somebody who learned by ear. And they were teaching how to write music on the page. And so they said, well, we, you know, you can audit the class, but you can't, you know, we, you know, and so, so I felt very dismissed. And if I were a little older when I got the class, I probably would have raised a stink about that. But in truth, the best part of college was developing friendships and relationships and the ability to understand different studies. That's what I liked about college. But it wasn't for music. I mean, there's so much out there. I literally learned how to score from watching videos. There are so many resources on the web to learn this stuff if you're willing to take the time to find them and learn from them. College is good for stuff like in the world, like if you want to become a counselor, if you want to become a scientist, if you want to have something that requires a degree. I simply just happen to work in an industry where a degree is not necessary. So that's why I'm being facetious about not going to college. The arts, I would dare say you're better set finding a community, finding people who are better than you and hanging out with them and talking with them to learn what they do and doing your own research for to be inventive. And then taking private classes, take master classes from artists or musicians. I take a master class from a composer out in LA named Mike Verta. And he has cheap master classes where he discusses film composition. So there are tons of resources out there. But again, I'm in an industry where a degree doesn't matter.
Right.
But what matters is your hard work and ability to develop a skill and how hard you're going to work at building that skill. And it tests your mettle. So it is a bit harder, and it's cutthroat. Everybody wants to be an actor. Everybody thinks we're special. Everybody wants to, you know, have their name in lights. Everybody wants their own thing. And so it's a saturated market.
Like you said, playing the keyboard, it's 10% of what you do.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, man, I'd love to play the keys more. I really would. I'd love to be Emerson, you know, all these other Van Cliburns and people playing on the keys and writing stuff. I would much prefer to do that. But it's about editing. It's about going out, building relationships. It's studying, continuing to study, watching videos, having conversations. You know, why do I want to put an insert into this track instead of a send? Why do I want to, you know, not put a motif here in the music in this scene? And why do I just want to keep that underscore? You know, why shouldn't the music not shine here? And it's, you know, putting the ego aside to support a story. So it's a lot of work.
On the flip side, you do have some music CDs, some piano music. In fact, your most recent release, I believe, was La Brea.
La Brea. Yeah, you said it right. Thank you, man.
Hey.
Not everybody does. Like it's, I made 3 piano CDs. I mean, I'm on Pandora, Spotify, all that stuff. So if you want
to... iTunes.
iTunes, yeah. So you can stream it or you can download it if you want. You know, I enjoy piano stuff. It's modern classical. It's pretty aggressive, to be quite honest.
Yes, it is.
I am not a fan of new age music. I am not a fan of soft serve when it comes to piano because there's too much of it. And my hero is Rachmaninoff. Uh-huh. So like growing up, I learned a lot of Sergei Rachmaninoff's music. And Tchaikovsky and Shostakovich and Debussy and Chopin and Kavalevsky and all those people.
There you go.
And I love the aggression of the romantic era.
Right. The power.
Yeah. That's what matters to me is the dynamics and learning how to write a great theme. You know, that's where great themes come from.
Well, Steve, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. You've made your email address known a couple of times. Can you share that one more time? And you've encouraged our listeners to write to you for all kinds of reasons. What's that address?
Email address is steveletness@gmail.com. STEVELET as in Tom, N as in Nancy, ES as in Sam, @gmail.com. Email me, you know, whatever questions you have. If you want to yell at me, if you think I'm being too harsh, or if you would like to learn more about what I do, if there's a way I can point you in a certain direction to assist you with learning about music or library music or writing for film or master classes, or let me be the person who stands in the middle of traffic to guide you. As terrifying as that actually sounds now.
Well stated. Well stated. And you have your feature film score coming out in the form of Santa's Boot Camp, which has been picked up by Sony Pictures, and the release date is November 15th of 2016.
You got it.
So when you're watching around Christmas time with your kids, and that music just takes you over and puts the lump in your throat or puts the fear in your heart, think of Steve.
I'm all about the fear factor.
Blame him, right?
Well, thank you, guys. I really appreciate you inviting me on here. It was really a pleasure meeting you folks and getting to talk to, you know, two gentlemen who are out there helping others and helping, really providing a service to empower us to reach our full potential. And so I really appreciate you guys inviting me on.
I think that's a byproduct of what Jeff and I really want to do, which is just have fun with audio. We won't have a shortage of podcast music for this one, I'm telling you now.
Well, actually, and you may do you need me to send you some files? Like, do you need anything in particular, or can you just, or can you glean
we can
enough
grab
about
it.
It out of SoundCloud?
How about if we send you a rough draft and give you a couple adjectives and you just create something?
There you go.
You know, there's something that is, I know we're kind of at the end of the interview, but like here's the funny thing is when I got into the film industry, one of my biggest concerns being somebody who's blind is that everything takes me longer to do. It just takes us longer because we have to figure stuff out. We have to move our head. We have to, it was just a concern to me that I couldn't write music fast enough. Because in this industry, you have to write quickly, you have to write effectively, and you have to do it right and get the product out of you. And because it takes me longer to read things, it takes me longer to set things up, I didn't know if I would be successful at it. And the irony is most of the projects that I have done, I have been forced to compose whatever it is within hours. And what that forced me to do, as we all should do, but especially those with challenges, is it forced me to become very familiar with my tools. And by somebody challenging me over and over again to say, look, we need you to score these many short films in this many days, and it's got to be tight, it's got to be good, you know, go. By being challenged, I was forced to understand my tools and to make templates and to write quickly to serve a story, no less. And at the end of the day, after doing this for 4 years, I have the confidence to say, even as a sight challenged person where a lot of things take me longer than others to do, I now know I can compete with anybody else in the film industry when it comes to making a product in a timely manner. I was so afraid of that when I first
got
into this.
Yeah.
And that's what the film industry did for me, is show me, yes, I could.
So on your way to Moorhead, you're going to be writing a song on the back of a Greyhound bus. Well, thanks a lot, Steve. This has really been a great interview. I don't even think of it as an interview; it's a conversation.
Well, those are the best ones to have, you know. I mean, that's how this should be. And thank you so much, guys.
Great.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks.
Hey, take care.
When we share
what we see through each other's eyes,
we can then begin to bridge the gap between the limited expectations and the realities of blind abilities.
For more podcasts with a blindness perspective, check us out on the web at www.blindabilities.com, on Twitter @blindabilities, download our app from the App Store, Blind Abilities, that's two words, or send us an email at info@blindabilities.com. Thanks for listening.